Win more listings and sell more listings with Realtor.com's Listing Toolkit. Most agents get their first seller lead within 3 days of activating their account. So get Listing Toolkit at Realtor.com/HousingWire.
Pulled from the hottest topics coming across our news desk, I'm Alcina Lloyd, and this is Housing Wire Daily. Today's HWD features the second episode of the Preparing for What's Next miniseries, sponsored by Black Knight and hosted by Housing Wire's assistant editor of Content Solutions, Jordan White. In today's episode, White is joined by Andy Walden, Vice President of Market Research at Black Knight, and Brennan O'Connell, Data Solutions Manager at Optimal Blue. During the interview, Walden and O'Connell discuss what's next in mortgage origination and the current transition to an equity-centric housing market. Well, thank you for listening, and here's today's episode.
Hello, Housing Wire listeners. My name is Jordan White, and I'm an assistant editor with Housing Wire. Today, I am joined by Andy Walden, VP of Market Research at Black Knight, and Brennan O'Connell, Data Solutions Manager at Optimal Blue. In this sponsored episode of Housing Wire Daily, we'll be focusing on what's next in mortgage origination. It's so nice to have you both here today. Thank you for joining us on Housing Wire Daily.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Morning, Jordan. Thank you.
So to kick off today's conversation, I'd love for our readers to learn more about both of you and your roles at Black Knight. Brennan, let's start with you.
Sure. I manage the data solutions for Optimal Blue. As you mentioned, we became part of the Black Knight family of companies in the fall of 2020. Can't believe it's been a year already. I spend my time developing and building awareness for new data and analytic products, primarily around mortgage origination activity. Mm-hmm. We're really fortunate at Optimal Blue to have access to a representative share of the market. Roughly 40% of new originations are processed through our market-leading pricing engine. And that data has been really the raw material for us to build a number of what we hope are useful products for the market. That includes our Optimal Blue Mortgage Market Indices. It's a daily rate index, which many of the listeners may be familiar with. We've got a rate lock license product that gives clients direct access to data. And then the Origination Market Monitor, sort of a sister to the Mortgage Monitor product that a report that Andy and team have done such a nice job on a monthly basis. So really happy to be here. And thanks again for having us on.
Of course.
Thanks, Brennan. And this is Andy. I get the kind of fun task of heading up the research team here at Black Knight. So whether it's kind of playing with Brennan and team's Optimal Blue rate lock data or our Black Knight home price index or our collateral analytics data or even our McDash data to really understand the lay of the land in terms of refinance incentive and refinance originations out there in the market. It's really kind of weeding through all of those different Black Knight data sets, mixing and matching and merging all those data sets, and really telling the underlying story of what's going on in the mortgage and housing market.
Thank you both so much for sharing. So just jumping right in, the historically low interest rates that have defined the market for the last few years appear to be slipping away. Could you give us some insight into why this is happening?
Sure, I'll take that one. I think last few years is really the right way to put it. So much of the rate conversation has been post-pandemic oriented, and I think there's good reasons for that. But the downward trend in mortgage rates actually started in late 18, early 19. Rates had just hit 5%. It's the first time they had reached those heights since 2011. Seems strange now to think of rates at 5%, but that's where they were end of 18, and did a bit of a 180, moved lower through 2019. And by the onset of the pandemic in the spring of 20, had reached roughly 3.5% for 30-year conforming rates. And as we all know, the Fed stepped in with its quantitative easing measures to inject liquidity into the credit markets, particularly with an emphasis on mortgages. So over the last year and a half, the Fed's been buying both treasuries and mortgage-backed securities at a clip of $120 billion per month or more. I think just below half of that has been MBS. Andy and I have really discussed this throughout the year that despite other factors that may have provided some upward pressure on mortgage rates, the Fed's MBS buying has really kept a pretty tight lid on mortgage rates and kept us in that sub-3 or 3% environment. With inflation rising, though, and signs of an economic recovery just around the corner, knock on wood, it was just a matter of time, before the Fed had to reduce the bond buying. And that news came in late September. The Fed announced that it anticipated tapering to begin later this year. I think at the time, rates were hovering around 3%. and shot up nearly 30 basis points over the next month. They've come back down a bit in the last week or two, but broad sentiment in the market is for rates to trend up in the coming year. The Fed stated they intend to reduce that buying program that I talked about, treasuries by $10 billion per month and MBS purchases by $5 billion per month. If they're doing that each month, that should result in a conclusion of their asset purchases by the middle of next year. And really, all else being equal, push rates in sort of an upward trajectory certainly provides some upward pressure on rates. And one other interesting item, we've talked about it and something that we're kind of tracking, is the original Fed buying program seemed to have a stronger impact on mortgage-backed securities than treasuries. So over the last year and a half, we've seen the spread between mortgage rates and 10-year hit historic lows, indicating the impact of the Fed buying was stronger on MBS than on treasury bonds. And the unwinding of that program could have the opposite effect. So 30-year rates could see relatively larger gains than the 10-year treasury, all else being constant. So time will tell. A few interesting things to watch, and certainly the Fed tapering process kind of at the center of it as we look towards 2022.
Yeah, you know, so going off of this idea of an economic recovery, it does appear that we're coming off the greatest refi boom in history. You know, so is the party over now that interest rates are on the rise? And what does this mean for homeowners who hesitated? Is it too late for them to kind of, you know, start doing something about it now?
And you're absolutely right. It has been a massive refinance boom that's resulted here over the last really 18 months and beyond. I've seen about 14.5 million homeowners that have been able to refinance to improve their situation over the last 18 months. It includes nearly 9 million homeowners that have refinanced to improve their interest rate or to improve the term on their mortgage. Those homeowners specifically have already realized about $14 billion in monthly payment savings. So a big stimulus, not only to those homeowners, but yeah, to the market as a whole. And then we've also seen 5.5 million homeowners that have been able to use those low rates to tap into some of the equity in their home and withdraw about $320 billion of equity as well. So when you kind of look holistically at 2020 and 2021, we saw a record level of refinance lending last year in 2020. We're on pace to be not quite at that level, but pretty darn close to that same level here in 2021. So very, very strong levels of refinance origination that have resulted from some of those QE efforts and the record low interest rates that we've seen. You asked, is the party over? I don't think the party's over, but it's certainly a tamer party than what we've been involved in over the last couple of years, right? And I think that transition is going to continue to take place. If you look at our McDash data and look at the underlying interest rates that are still held out there by homeowners in the market right now, if you look at just refinance incentive, it's down about 25% over the last 45 days, and it's down about 50%-ish from where we were in late 2020. So you've certainly seen a pullback in the incentive to refinance that homeowners have out there in the market. Now, when you look forward at what refinance volumes could look like here in late 2021 and 2022, it really depends on the context in which you're looking at refinance incentive, right? We have about 11.5 million refinance candidates as we stand here today. Again, I kind of gave you the numbers of how that compares over the last couple of months. We're certainly lower in terms of refinance incentive and potential powder there for the refinance market. But if you look at years before 2020, that would be an all-time high, right? So still historically strong incentive, but nowhere near where we've been over the last couple of months. Because of that, and because of the Fed's continued tapering expectations throughout 2022, as Brendan mentioned, we anticipate the market will continue to slow down and it will transition noticeably as it slows down. And I think those lenders that can get out in front of that transition are going to be well positioned into 2022.
Right. And, you know, so you touched on this a bit, but I'd love to dig a bit deeper. So speaking of borrowers, how are they reacting? Are you seeing signs of that shift in refinance incentive in your rate lock data?
I think borrowers are reacting the way you'd expect them to. So this rate incentive is so critical for determining what the makeup of our market looks like. So the rate incentive has been shrinking and rate term refi activity is now down nearly 63% from the same time last year when 30-year rates were still in that sub 3% range. And that change in rates, the subsequent drop in refis has shifted the lending landscape overall. After accounting for over 60% of new originations for much of the first year of the pandemic, refis are now only accounting for roughly 45% of originations. That's from our most recent data in October. And I think within refinance, that there's a bit of a story, a bit of a shift as well. We track cash out separately from rate term refis and have not surprisingly seen a growing share of cash out loans relative to rate and term refinances. And that's a function both of a cooling rate term market, but also strong growth in cash outs, which are far less rate incentive driven and are more dependent on things like home price appreciation and equity, which I think, we've got really strong data to talk about. And I think Andy will get into it in a little bit here.
Yeah, Brendan, I love that you just mentioned equity. You know, let's talk about it. Everybody's favorite topic. Black Knight reports that homeowners have more equity available to them than ever before. How do you see that impacting mortgage lending as we move into 2022?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we all know the record levels of home price growth that we've seen over the last 18 months. You touched on it, Brendan touched on it a little bit ago as well. And that home price growth, along with improving mortgage performance out there and having a lot of other positive impacts on the mortgage and housing markets, it's also really improved homeowners' equity as well. If you just look at simple tappable equity, right? It's a metric we use to look at how much equity homeowners have that they can borrow against before hitting an 80% CLTV limit on their home. The average homeowner has gained almost $50,000 in tappable equity over the last 15 months. So massive gains on a homeowner basis. When you look at it from a lender's perspective at the market, they've seen a $2.5 trillion jump in tappable equity since the onset of the pandemic. That's 40% more equity they have to lend against than they did at the beginning of the pandemic as well. And as Brendan mentioned, it's causing already a noticeable transition in lending patterns out there in the market that is very likely to continue to take place as we move into 2022. We're going to see a transition away from this rate-centric market that's really been driving refinance activity throughout 2020 and into 2021. And we're going to move more towards an equity-centric market. We've already seen cash-out refinances take over the lion's share of refinance activity in recent months. If you look at kind of that historic precedent that Brendan talked about, 2018, 2019, when interest rates got up near 5%, we saw cash outs make up 4 out of 5 refinance originations at that time. And we very well could be heading more towards that type of a market as we move into 2022, where it's really equity driven, where equity is driving the bulk of refinance activity by the time we get to late next year.
Yeah, that's great. And kind of based off everything that we've discussed today, you know, with rates, with, you know, equity, how can lenders best position themselves for 2022?
And I think there are a couple different things that they can do. The first one is understanding those transitions that are taking place. The first being the transition from a refinance-centric market, as Brendan mentioned, to more of a purchase-centric market as we move into 2022. And positioning yourself and your company to succeed in a purchase-centric market is going to be key. Brendan mentioned it's been a two-thirds refinance market over the last few quarters. By the time we get to the end of 2022, it very well could be a two-thirds purchase-heavy market, right? So understanding that specific transition. The other one is understanding the transition, again, away from rate-centric markets to equity-centric markets. And servicers and lenders alike have really struggled in identifying borrowers looking to access equity, lending to those specific borrowers. You see it when you look at retention rates. You see it when you look at lending activity over the last couple of years. So folks that are able to capitalize on that trend and really understand those key drivers of the market, understand those borrowers, are really going to succeed and position themselves well in 2022. And there are a number of solutions that can help borrowers there, whether it's servicing digital technologies, which are kind of an overlay on top of their servicing platform that allow borrowers to better understand their equity positions and self-serve in many ways. I think that's a very simple way to gain a little bit of success as we move into next year, whether it's retention analytics and really looking at those underlying drivers, right? As the market transition, things are going to move very, very quickly over the next few quarters. Really understanding the changing dynamics, who's refinancing, why are they refinancing, and serving those specific borrowers, I think is going to serve both lenders and servicers very well. And then another simple move that lenders can make is really focus on the recent. And what I mean by that is borrowers that have taken out their current mortgage in 2018 or later are driving half of rate term activity. They're driving a third of cash out activity. And servicers and lenders are much more successful at retaining those types of borrowers in their portfolios, in their lending pools or their servicing portfolios alike. So really focusing on borrowers that you've had recent interactions with they're very active in today's market, and you'll find much more success in retaining borrowers and regaining confidence and working relationships with those borrowers and borrowers that maybe you worked with 5 to 10 years ago.
Yeah, I just want to add, Andy covered it really well. The only point I'd add is that we expect to see softer overall demand next year, just across the board. We anticipate volumes being lower, and in that situation, pricing really becomes central as lenders compete for less borrowers while still trying to maintain margins at their targeted levels. And you know, as many other lenders have found out, the pricing engine, the flexibility to set your markups, to control loan officer compensation, to manage your pricing kind of apparatus across the organization, really becomes paramount for lenders to keep a well-oiled pricing strategy. I'm going to obviously put in the shameless plug for the Optimal Loop pricing engine here, but certainly, you know, we just say that having your sort of ability to dial in on pricing and will serve lenders very well as they seek to maintain margins and grow their business into, you know, potentially some headwinds from a volume perspective in 2022.
Yeah, you know, those are all great points and definitely something lenders should consider as we move into 2022. Andy and Brennan, I'd like to say thank you both for joining us on Housing Wire Daily and sharing your insights. Listeners, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Thank you.
Now more than ever, the housing industry is looking to its leaders for answers. That's why each week, the Housing News Podcast invites a new mortgage, fintech, or real estate executive to the show to provide its listeners with more perspective on the announcements and news stories crossing Housing Wire's news desk. Hosted by Sarah Wheeler and produced by Elsina Lloyd, the Housing News Podcast is now available on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, and more.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. I hope you have a great afternoon. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on all the hottest stories crossing our news desk daily. The podcast is now available wherever you like to listen. Make sure to tune in tomorrow.